Camilla Chester is a glutton for punishment because she's come back into the studio again to talk about another book. And so you introduced me to an author, Jane Harper, an Australian, of whom I had never heard. But that's not that surprising because this is her first novel and it's called The Dry. Its context is Australia. What's the background?
They've had a drought that's been going on and on and on and on, and it's really affected the rural community to the point where the lack of water is desperate. There's no crops growing. It's described very well that the poverty that people are subjected to, and they're becoming quite desperate. And normally you've got this lovely river that's running through. It's normally quite lush, productive land. I mean, it's a hard way of life anyway, and you have that feeling of that sort of harsh Australian outback, tough kind of characters that are coming through that are used to surviving in difficult situations. But this really is very desperate. The drought is extreme, so that the river's completely dried up. You've got nothing growing at all. People are very, very depressed. And the heat, I mean, living in that dry heat continuously, it's described very well about how it just is completely exhausting and wearing for people, and they're trying to continue with their lives and it's just impossible. Nothing that they do can make it rain. And it's just on and on and on, relentless heat.
And our main character, and he's gone away from here, he's left here for reasons that we discover through the narrative, but he's come back because there's been a murder. People he's involved in knows.
He's received a mysterious sort of letter that's brought him back to where he grew up as a boy, and he moved away from as a teenager. And because his old best friend, Luke, has died, and it seems to be a closed case that Luke has actually, in a moment of desperation, because of the financial situation that he's in, has shot his wife and child and then himself. So you've got this sort of triple funeral, which is horrendous, that Aaron comes back to, and that's where the book starts.
God, that middle coffin was small. Lying between the two full-size ones only made it look worse, if that were possible. Tiny kids with combed hair plastered to their skulls pointed it out. Dad, look, that box is in football colours. Those old enough to know what was inside stared in appalled silence, fidgeting in their school uniforms as they edged a little closer to their mothers. Above the three coffins, a family of four stared down from a blown-up photograph. Their static smiles were overlarge and pixelated. Fork recognised the picture from the news. It had been used a lot. Beneath, the names of the dead were spelled out in native flowers. Luke, Karen, Billy.
There are other characters that Aaron, the policeman from another town, as it were, another city, has come back to this community. He's not intending to stay very long, but he actually stays longer than Claire, because he gets involved in it. And he starts to work with the local policeman who's trying to investigate. There were four of them, four youngsters, and there was Aaron and Luke, Gretchen and Ellie.
That's right, yeah.
And insofar as you can pair them up permanently, it's Aaron and Ellie and Luke and Gretchen.
Yeah.
Now, Gretchen is at the funeral. They encounter each other again after this absence of some time.
She's one of the few friendly faces that Aaron encounters that's actually pleased to see him. There's a lot of hostility towards Aaron, and you've got a parallel story running at the same time, so you're never quite sure until quite far on to the book of why Aaron left. But it's obviously under poor circumstances and he's been almost pushed out, and you don't really know why. But Gretchen's one of the few that's very pleased to see Aaron back and is very positive towards him, and there's a friendship, strong friendship there still. And she's a great character, actually, really likable. And so you see quite a bit of Gretchen, and you also see flashbacks to their life of the four of them as teenagers. And Luke's a very interesting character, the one who's died. So there's all this ambiguity around Luke. Is he a really good guy that was Aaron's best mate and it was all very fun? Or is he capable of doing such a horrific thing? You're not sure, so which makes that very interesting and page-turning.
Because Luke's parents are still alive.
Yes.
And they have certain elements of guilt themselves because they feel that they might have helped to cause the problems because they passed the farm on to him, as it were, their farm. Mm. And in his childhood, Aaron seems to spend a lot of time with this family and he goes to visit them. Again, the context of the drought and everything seems to be falling apart because it would do. Mm. I mean, you can't sustain a community in those sorts of conditions.
Mm. Got a nice place here, Barb, Fork said politely. She had always been scrupulously house-proud, but looking around now, he could see the odd sign of clutter. Dirty mugs crowded a side table, the recycling bin was overflowing, and stacks of letters stood unopened. It all told a tale of grief and distraction. "Thank you. We wanted something small and manageable after..." She hesitated for a beat, swallowed. "After we sold the farm to Luke."
And of course, Barb and Jerry, who are Luke's parents, they have the surviving grandchild as well. So this is a strange part of the puzzle piece, because you're thinking, well, Luke killed his wife Karen and his son Billy. Why did he leave the baby alive? And the baby is being cared for by Barb and Jerry, and they're clinging to this child, obviously, as the only surviving relative. And they're also clinging to the idea that Luke's innocent. And that's one of the reasons that Aaron gets so caught up into the whole mystery of it, is trying to unpick what actually has happened here. Is it such a close-cut case? And at the same time, Rayko, the policeman, is a really good guy, and he allows Aaron, because he's in authority in the police, although be it not in this sort of field, to come into the investigation, because there's some pieces of the puzzle that don't quite fit for Rayko as well.
The local view is quite simple. Luke killed his wife and child. And then there's these questions. Mm. Was that really what happened? You know, because the fact that the baby survived is the first, well, one of the early clues. And Rayko goes on searching and digging. He doesn't give up. The police come in from the nearby town. Mm. They wrap it all up and say, clearly suicide following murder. And the man was depressed. The man was in trouble. That's it. We go home now. Mm. And there's a local policeman said, something more here. And he keeps digging and digging and digging. Literally, physically. I mean, he goes under buildings trying to find these, because he thinks there's something that he can find.
Yes.
He's not convinced at all.
Where haven't you searched yet? Rayko nodded at the missing weatherboard. On this property, I think this officially makes everywhere. Fork frowned. It's a bit weird. Yeah, that's what I thought too. Fork said nothing, just stared at him. Rayko was sweating hard. His face, arms and clothes were covered in grime and dust from scrabbling around in the baking heat of the sheds. What else? Fork said. There was a silence. What do you mean? All this effort, down on your hands and knees all morning in a dead man's barn in this heat, Fork said. There's something more, or at least you think there's more. There was a long pause. Then Rayko breathed out. Yeah, he said. There's more.
And he's another likeable character. We warm to him as the reader, and we're sort of rooting for him. We're thinking, well, there's got to be a story here. You know, there's got to be more to it. And of course, the way that they team up together, Aaron and Rayko, is really good read. And you're engaged with them, and you're rooting for them to try and find out what's been happening. And at the same time, this lovely idea of something happening in the past, which is very intriguing, very interesting, holding your attention. I mean, it's a very gripping book. You just want to read and read and read and read, because it's so interesting, engaging and exciting.
Most thrillers or police things are sort of gripping, and they drag you forward because you want to know what finishes and what happens in the end. Why I liked this one, why I enjoyed this one, was that it wasn't just that.
No.
It was about people that I actually got to care about.
Yes.
And for me, reading a book, listening to a book, I have to care about the people, otherwise there's no point.
Yeah.
And he's, as you say, Aaron, the protagonist or the main character, is himself quite ambiguous, because we don't really know. And it comes apparent there was a problem which caused him to go away. He encounters people from his past that he'd rather not have met again. One is the father of his erstwhile girlfriend, Ellie.
Yes.
And his own nephew. And they seem to be quite unpleasant characters.
Mal Deacon had a curve to his spine now, but was still a tall man with ropey arms leading to large hands. His fingers were knotted and swollen with age, and were almost white as he gripped the back of a chair for support. His forehead furrowed deep into a scowl, and his exposed scalp was angry pink between strands of grey hair. Fork braced himself for an outburst, but instead, a look of confusion flashed across Deacon's face. He shook his head slightly, the loose chicken flesh on his neck rubbing against a dirty collar. Why are you back?
And you're thinking, why are they being so unpleasant towards Aaron? I mean, Mal Deacon is particularly aggressive and hostile towards him, and at some point mistakes him really for his own father. And so that's very intriguing. And you're thinking, why is Aaron being so... Yes.
Did Aaron go away because he did something or something happened to him, involved him? Or did he go away because something happened to his father? His father was involved. So the author plays this game.
Yes.
Not quite sure what went on, but you want to find out, so you stay with it.
But at the same time, it's beautifully written. You've got these wonderful descriptions. I mean, as a standalone, it could work as a literary novel. Is that well written? But this exciting story is really pulling you along. So it ticks all the boxes. It's a very enjoyable read.
And as you say, there are flashbacks to when the youngsters were, they used to go out and sit near the river. I can't remember whether they smoked cigarettes or drank or whatever it was, but the normal things that teenagers do.
Lots of vodka, I think.
That's right. And yet there's conflicts within that group.
Yes.
You're never quite sure what Luke is up to. As you say, he's a very ambivalent sort of character because he's both Aaron's best friend and yet... Is he also doing him down? You know, what is he going to play off next?
And there seems to be a fight over Ellie. You know, that Ellie is supposedly more Aaron's girlfriend, but Luke's obviously interested even though he's with Gretchen, and you've got this power dynamic between the four of them. And you're thinking, is Luke the most powerful? Or how is it working? Ellie seems to be the one that dictates a lot of the things that happen.
They'd spent much of the afternoon leaning against the rock tree in the shade. Ellie had seemed more distant than normal. Twice that afternoon he'd asked her something and she hadn't appeared to even hear him. Eventually, terrified of boring her, he'd suggested tracking down Luke or Gretchen. To his relief, she shook her head. "I don't think I could face the chaos right now," she'd said. "It's all right with just us, isn't it?" "Yeah, of course. Of course it was."
That dynamic between the teenagers is very important to that story of the past, so it's interesting to pay attention to it.
There are other characters throughout. There's the man who owns the bar, Scotsman McMurdo.
He drifts in as a backpacker, and actually in the audio version, the guy that does the narration is brilliant at accents and has his just exactly right, because it's this sort of lilt of Scott embedded in the Australian accent because he's been there so long. But yeah, he drifts as a backpacker and stays. And why you'd stay in such a hostile place, I don't know, but he does. And he's quite friendly towards Aaron. Aaron's staying in the pub, so he's his regular income. And he is quite a stable, solid figure. So McMurdo really enjoys having him there and confides in him quite a bit. So he's quite an important character. There's quite a lot of characters in the book, as you'd expect with a crime novel, because it's a bit of a whodunit.
You've got to trail. Yeah. You've got to get people thinking, is it that one? And the Scotsman, of course, you know, running a bar in an outback
where
it's pretty desperate times, you've got to be fairly strong.
And
he has lots of potential fights going on all the time.
Because you've got Mal Deacon, and of course this awful nephew that Mal Deacon has, this Grant character who's really aggressive. Yeah. And there's this whole story about Luke and Grant having a hostile relationship and having this previous history of fighting a lot in the pub. There's lots of possible people that you can point the finger to.
You point the fingers at the old man, Mal Deacon, the father of Ellie, the girlfriend of our hero, as it were. And there's all sorts of suspicions thrown up there. Was there something odd in that relationship which we didn't particularly like, or was it to do with Grant and the nephew? You know, what was going on inside that family? Because they seem a very dysfunctional group, just those two. And so these things are thrown in there all the time. And then there's the local school in the middle of all this, where the kids go to school, and there's a headmaster who's actually relatively newly in with the community, isn't he? He's come in from somewhere else with his wife.
He has a son, doesn't he, that's very good friends with Billy, the boy that was murdered. So he's engaged in the community. And actually, there's this lovely bit in the book where Aaron goes to the school with Reiko, and they see the pictures that the children have done, which depicts how barren the farming community has become, because all the pictures are brown and without any sort of green in them at all. It's a clever way, really, that the writer has used description of the actual community in the to describe the setting.
Yes, because often in any war situation, they get the kids to draw because that's sort of therapy. Mm. It doesn't feel like therapy in this case, does it? This feels like a depiction of the horrible situation that they're all in.
You do feel for the community there, definitely. It's become very desperate, which then makes you think, Well, Luke could do that because it's such a desperate place that you might be driven to that sort of extreme. And certainly that's what the police have thought and just written it off to that sort of extreme behaviour, that it's a desperate man in a desperate situation. Yes.
Anybody could have done it, any of the characters that are put forward. And that's the great thing, the great unravelling, as it were, as you work through. And you have to take your pick and think, well, am I going to be right at the end or not? And that, I suppose, is the element of the whodunit, as it were. But it works well. This woman is, she's described as a Sunday Times top 10 bestseller. I never know what that means, but there's good reviews. She's gone on to write more.
I think this is the start of a series for Aaron Foulkes. So he's going to be her main protagonist, I think. It reminded me a little bit of Kate Atkinson's novels with Jackson, Brodie, but obviously with an Australian slant. So Kate Atkinson's very British and it's got a very British take, but similar sort of way that very talented writers that have turned to crime because it's such a successful genre, isn't it?
She's worked as a journalist before the writing this first novel, and therefore she's got a journalistic approach to it. She's concise, she gets the points down, and yet it flows.
Yes.
And that's what I like. It works
very
both
neat.
Ways.
Yeah.
Keeps you going forward, but it gives you something on the way. I suspect, I don't know, that it's relatively easy to write something that keeps going forward without too much skill about the characterisation. But if you get the characterisation there and this interplay and the suspicion about all sorts of different people, then it works very well.
Yeah, I thought it was a very clever book.
Good, thank you very
and
much.
A very nice, concise ending. Sometimes you're left feeling a little bit unsatisfied. Oh, I'm a children's writer. I like a good soft closure on an ending. And this is a great ending of the book. So read it for that alone.
Thank you very much.
Okay, with pleasure.
The Dry by Jane Harper was narrated by Steve Shanahan. The audiobook lasts for approximately 10 hours. We're most grateful to Caliber Audio for providing a copy of the recording so that we can use some extracts to illustrate this discussion. The music accompanying this edition of the Talking Bookshelf is called Good Times. It was composed and recorded by Goffby of Kenilworth, who's very generously given us permission to use his music.